Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 23 of season 9 of Movie Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the Die Hard duo, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is David Brook of Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show, David.
Glad to be back, yeah, and this is a crazy minute we've got coming up here, so it should
For
be
sure.
Fun.
Well, you see, it's, you know...
Five minutes.
That's, well, as we talked about yesterday, you know, that's the essence of Die Hard 4. You know, we get both a helicopter and a plane scene. So, why not? And whatever, as we talked about yesterday, this is more of an action movie, so these scenes make sense to add them in here.
Yeah, yeah.
No question about that. So episode 23 begins with the truck continuing to wreak havoc and ends with John in the truck starting to slip. So, you know, John is in pursuit of the hazmat van that has his daughter and Farrell as hostages, and he's doing all he can to try and catch up to them. And, you know, we see that he just can't keep driving straight. You know, once again, he's dealing with cars that are just abandoned in the middle of the street. You know,
they are literally in the middle of the street, yeah.
He's swerving the car.
I guess you could argue, because of what's happened in the film, I guess there's all these crazy kind of blackouts and there's loads of crazy stuff going on. I guess maybe they just got, still though, would you abandon your car? I don't know, yeah, because there are some literally just stuck right in the middle of the...
Yeah. And this time he actually avoids it because he swerves around. Yeah. So, you know, that works too, I guess. And then we're back with the helicopters, and we hear over the radio, "This is Central. We have a patch for Director Bowman." "Sir, Central's trying to reach you." And Bowman takes the walkie-talkie and says, "Go, Bowman. It's McClane. He goes, "Listen to me. Gabriel's on the 695 heading north in the hazmat truck." "Wait, Gabriel has left Woodland? We're heading there right now." So it's great because, you know, John, first of all, I love the way that basically Warlock was able to patch him through, but he doesn't have to like use Warlock as an operator by having him say, "Yeah, this is so and so, you know, I'm connecting you to John McClane," you know, that type of thing. It's so again, you know, you have to just believe the hacker ability, I guess, of Warlock, that he can do it.
I was going to say, this 5 minutes in general, you're going to have to suspend an awful lot of disbelief at several occasions.
you're saying the least of our worries is get connected to Bowman. Okay. And again, he didn't even get connected to Bowman. He get connected to the operator.
Yeah.
Who's willing to patch something through.
Patch a CB radio through somehow, yeah.
Yeah, and they don't even, you know, it's not even, like, let's say for argument's sake, again, we're going to suspend disbelief here, but let's say for argument's sake that John wants to get in touch with Bowman and he goes through the switchboard. Is the switchboard going to say, "Oh, well, okay, it's John McClane, so let's put the call through"? It's like, how would John convince this operator, you know, or this radio woman to connect him to Bowman? Mm. You know, it was one thing when he called Bowman's phone. Okay, I can understand. But it's like, how long is John going to have to take trying to explain to them, you know, why Bowman is actually going to want to take this call? So, yeah, I don't know.
I almost wish they had that scene with him trying to talk but yeah, I guess pacing wise, it might have struggled unless they originally wrote it. But yeah, probably not.
Probably not. Again, it goes without saying that if John McClane is calling, you're going to patch him through. That's all it goes with. Yeah. And I love how John is informing them of the information. You know, he has to tell them.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's basically saying, "You guys are a little late now that you think that, you know, you need to get to Woodland." So then John continues by saying, and Bowman, he's got my daughter. "Listen, this hazmat truck was a government vehicle, So it should be LoJack'd, right? Track it down. It should take you right to them. Which, it's actually quite smart that he mentions this. You know, the whole idea of, you know, trying to figure out how to get there. So.
Yeah. Thinking on his feet.
Exactly. Saying that, you know what LoJack is, right? I mean, we talked about this earlier in the season, but you know what LoJack is?
I've heard the term. I must admit, I don't quite know what it is, no.
It's basically getting information about a car as to where, okay. You know, like it's a locator. It's a car locator.
Oh, okay.
That they use when cars are being, you know, are stolen. So yeah. If they have this chip in them, they're able to find where the car is.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's the way that works. It makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And with it being a hazmat car as well, you'd have thought there would be some extra protection of that sort anyway. So, yeah.
Probably. And again, we both know that it's very funny that John is saying this because, you know, the people in the hazmat vehicle are quite smart also. You'd think that they would know that there is a LoJack in there and try and change the code or something.
Oh, yeah,
like that,
yeah.
Which they don't do, but whatever.
Yeah.
You know. And then he says, John, okay, give me the tag number, which basically means give me the license plate number. And John goes, all right, here it comes. Hold on. Gulf Tango 592 November. So basically it's GT592N. And then, you know, he goes, okay, thanks. Where's Farrell? Now, why does Bowman really care at this point where Farrell is?
I don't know.
You know, and it's funny that John only mentions that they have his daughter. He doesn't say they've got his, you know, Lucy and, you know, and Farrell.
And Farrell, yeah. Yeah, I guess they're trying. I think, yeah, I guess earlier in the film, they'd still want him. No, because even when he comes in, they're not bothered about him, are they? Yeah, that is unusual. Well, I guess he still cares about a civilian that's been taken, but yeah.
No, but you know, earlier, Bowman was very antagonistic against Farrell.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, he knows that Farrell is connected to this whole thing somehow.
Yeah. He's still worried that he's going to do something and he wants to check what he's up to, but I don't know.
Maybe.
You don't get that sense, though, from what he says, but I don't know.
Could be.
Or it was just thrown in to show that someone cares about him.
Maybe. Maybe it's because, okay, John didn't mention where Farrell is. And Farrell got shot like a half hour ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know where he is.
I guess they still want to stay on top of what's happening. Yeah.
Right. And but I love John's response. He goes, he's with them. Now, what does that mean? He's with them could make it sound as if he's a bad guy. Or, I mean, obviously we know what his intent is to say that he's also a hostage. But he doesn't say that. He says he's with them, which can make it sound like, okay, Farrell flipped.
Especially to the FBI guy who's a bit dubious about him anyway.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then John goes, listen to me. I'm going to go in there and get Lucy out. But if something happens to me, you've got to send the cavalry in. You hear me? I mean, everybody. Don't let that maniac get my daughter. You hear me? He goes, John, don't worry. Now, this sounds like a callback to the whole conversation he had with Powell in the original movie.
Yeah.
You know, where he basically said, you know, when this is all over, find my wife. I don't know how you're going to do it, but you'll know then how to find her. You know, you know, he still doesn't. it's as if John thinks that he's not going to make it once again.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a definite callback. We'll get into, I think it's the next episode. There's another moment that I think is a bit of a callback to it's the next episode. But yeah, I think, and watching some of the interviews on the disc, it does sound like the director was a bit of a fan of the original movies. Well, who isn't, I guess. But
Len Wiseman, we've talked about that he's that much of this is an homage to the previous three movies. But again.
Even though it ends up not being anything like it, but
that's right.
But yeah, the little nods at least.
And then John says, "I want your word, Bowman." Yeah, you have it. He goes, "McLean out."
Mic drop.
Exactly. Seriously. You know, but again, it's a very interesting conversation that the two of them are having. You know, because John's in the middle of a pursuit at this point.
Yeah. It is a bit odd, and they do add weight on his response. The FBI guy's response to kind of you have it as a very brief random. I mean, it makes sense, but a brief kind of random emotional beat in the middle of this crazy truck chase.
Yeah. Right, and John is really close to the hazmat vehicle the whole time. It's not as if he's so far away. You know, which is very funny the way that you know, they have this whole conversation during this pursuit. You know, but you're right. There, it's a little bit of an emotional break. You know, maybe trying to make John feel a little more human in this movie. You know, because again, based on what's about to happen.
Yeah.
And then John just smashes through some more cars as he's driving by.
That brings up something I was going to mention earlier as well is I was always wondering how fast can those kind of trucks, or I'd call it a lorry, I guess, in the UK, but how fast do they actually go? Because he just sees he's got quite a load behind him and he's really plowing through all these cars and things. I'd be interested to see if they can really go that fast with that sort of load. I don't know, maybe it just seems faster than it is, but...
So in other words, you're gonna have to do one of those. What's the TV show that they check the
MythBusters? Yeah,
MythBusters. See if it's really possible. Can a truck hauling all this computer equipment, in the back,
catch up to a smaller like van? Yeah, while smashing through dozens of cars.
Yeah, you never know.
I mean, they're tough. I guess they wouldn't get a lot of damage like back from hitting those cars. But still, you'd think it'd slow it down.
Yeah, but again, John's driving, so why not?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I didn't do research on whether that's feasible or not, because again, especially in this episode, we're not talking just about feasible.
No.
Yeah, you know. And then the shot changes, and we see the F-35, flying through the sky or zipping through the sky, getting closer to them. And then we're back inside the hazmat van, and Gabriel goes, there's the F-35. Did you get the go codes? And he goes, Trey, did you get the go codes? Yeah, I got the go codes. Can you connect me to the pilot? He goes, isolating the radio, sending him the go codes. AV-81. You know, because, obviously Gabriel needs to know how to get in touch with him. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then Gabriel then goes, AV-81, this is Marine Air Wing ATC. The pilot says, go for AV-81. Confirmed terrorist vehicle has been located in your sector. Big rig truck. Currently in pursuit of a hazmat vehicle. And he goes, I see them, ATC. You're authorized to engage and destroy. Copy that. AV-81 engaging. So, obviously, we understand why... they're believing why the pilot will believe him. You know, this is also a callback to Die Hard 2, you know, where Barnes asks, why are they listening to, you know, after the crash of the British Airlines flight, he basically says, why are they listening to him? He says, well, he's calling from our channel, so why wouldn't they be listening? You know, why wouldn't they believe them? So here it's a question also that There's no reason why this pilot would not believe what he's being told.
No, yeah, you know? Someone's come on with the right codes and things like that.
Exactly.
I guess you could argue it might not be a familiar voice, but who knows? I guess they might have traveled out from somewhere else anyway. But
no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't even go with, because if he doesn't have a familiar voice, again, the pilot is not going to know who's manning the station at that point. So no, that
yeah, I guess not.
Okay, that one I wouldn't go with. Sorry. But then John, as this whole thing is happening, John is still plowing through all the cars in the middle of the road. Mm. And then we talked about yesterday, we get some great shots of all the different screens that Trey has. Showing all the armaments and stuff like that, as he's still preparing Gabriel for what he needs to do there. And, you know, from this point pretty much to the end of this segment, we're just going to be having, again, everyone listening, I'm assuming, my assumption is you've seen this movie, but you can definitely just suspend all disbelief here.
Yeah.
We now have two and a half minutes of a plane chasing after a truck.
Absolutely decimating all this kind of
that's right.
Highway system and all these, there's loads of other cars everywhere. Who knows who's in those ones? I mean, they do seem to be empty, but still. Yes. Yeah, it's absolutely bonkers. It's
like, yeah. Again,
there's no way this would happen.
You'd think that you know, you'd need a higher clearance in order to be able to start shooting in a residential area like this.
Yeah. Or at least he probably wouldn't be using rockets. He might just be using machine guns or something. But yeah, the way it happens.
Yeah.
And plus, I'm not convinced they'd fly under that bridge in that much. Yeah.
That's right.
That's some pretty damn good flying.
Yes.
I mean, they're maneuverable, those planes, but still.
Right. And John, throughout this whole thing, is screaming, "God damn it, you're shooting at the wrong guy." You know, we even get a shot of Gabriel talking to Lucy and says, "I don't think Daddy's coming, honey." You know, just a few little things that I don't know. I don't particularly love the way that this whole scene is all set up, because, again, it goes back to the fact that it's a fun action scene, but it's just not Die Hard. And, you know, watching the bridge and, you know, all of these roads collapsing, you know, little by little, as the truck is, like, John is driving the truck and you see the bridge above him, right behind him, just slowly,
just at the right time.
You know, the domino effect of it, you know, just breaking apart.
Yeah.
And it is. Yeah. And the way that the pilot then flies underneath these bridges in order to come face to face with John is also a little too unbelievable from that perspective.
That'd be ludicrously dangerous for him to do that. And just, it'd just be so foolish, because it's still barreling along, that truck, as well.
Forget about that.
The whole scene is.
We see the bridge collapsing underneath.
Yeah, Right.
And then
the whole sequence is
really stupid. Yeah, John aims the truck at the plane and then swerves out of the way and crashes off to the side with where he's going. But he crashes off to the side, but still is somehow climbing, you know, the bridge. You know,
which is a very circular
bridge of the whole thing. You know, he's sort of gaining momentum, I guess you could say, but he looks and sees the hazmat truck getting away, but this pilot doesn't give up, and he shoots again and misses, but underneath the highway that John's on, and John does his best to, you know, pull the wheels back on, because the truck does a wheelie on the side, you know, like a side wheelie.
And it seems to be like using John's weight to put it back right, which is just ridiculous.
That's right. And John is very heavy, so it makes sense. Yeah. Again, completely ridiculous the way that this whole thing is just going. And John just screams at them and, you know, goes, "Is that it, huh? Is that your best shot?" So, I don't know. And then John keeps going. First of all, I'm trying to figure out where this highway is supposed to go, because it just looks like he's going in circular motions upwards.
I guess he's going up to join
the plane.
It might be an off ramp as well, or an on ramp or whatever, but it's just a very big one though.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah, very bizarre.
Matthew Spaghetti Junction in Birmingham. There's a famous kind of area of road in Birmingham in the UK called nicknamed Spaghetti Junction, because it's bonkers. There are so many kind of roundabouts and kind of on ramps and off ramps, and it's absolutely crazy. Just look it up online. It basically, from an overhead view, the roads just look like spaghetti. It's just like, it's absolutely crazy. I accidentally got had to turn round there a couple of months ago because I went too far on the motorway. I was like, oh, I better turn off here. And then I realized this is Spaghetti Junction. It was just like, oh, it's bonkers. But yeah, it reminds me a bit of that because it's just going round and round. But yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then the pilot finally gets a good shot and decides to use his machine guns and completely decimates the top half of this truck and of the back. And, like, everything, he just needed to shoot a little lower in order to get
yeah.
But luckily John saw this coming and ducked down.
He's fine.
Yeah, of course. And then we see John driving the truck, and now he has an outside view of the whole thing. And he, as John then looks up and one of the planks or areas of the road just like plops down, and then John just drives up it.
Yeah.
That's real plausible too. It's not gonna
weak enough to fall, but not weak enough to break when you start driving up it in a massive
with a truck. And then he finally reaches a point where it does fall down. And he tries to move forward, and the truck starts sliding backwards. And John starts getting a little concerned about the fact that it's moving backwards the way it is.
As you would.
Yeah, it makes sense. Again, completely unrealistic here. This entire sequence. Again, it's fun, but once you start thinking about it, even for a second.
It's almost fun for the wrong reasons because it's so ridiculous. As I say, I enjoyed this scene, but purely because it's so silly, it's so over the top, it's just utter lunacy. But yeah, enjoyable for that reason.
Yes, and again, but the question is whether it fits in with the whole idea of a Die Hard type movie.
I mean, all the Die Hard, like the first two Die Hard films, had their like kind of one key, big, slightly ridiculous sequence, but nothing to this level. It still had an element of realism in there because obviously in the first one you've got him jumping off, holding on to the
hose pipe, the hose, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's your big. And again, it's a. It's not necessarily far fetched. It's kind of an over the top scene, and in reality, that would be pretty dangerous. And probably wouldn't pull it off. And in the second film, you do have the kind of the ejector seat bit,
right?
Which is again a bit over the top, but still there is some element of reality. And again, it's all about it. Still gets Bruce Willis hurt, and that's kind of what these films are about. He's getting continuously more and more beaten up.
Yeah.
So there is realism there, but this just no. It's just bonkers.
Yeah. Seriously. I don't even know what to say at this point about this because it's just so it just doesn't feel like it fits in this movie.
No, it feels more like a superhero kind of like a Marvel kind of thing. Just
that's right.
Crazy effects going off all over the place.
That's right. This is the Battle of New York type of thing,
Yeah.
But it doesn't fit in properly here.
No, not at all.
But what can you do? That's the way this segment ends.
Yeah.
Group of 5 minutes, which went by very quickly because more than 2.5 of the minutes are a truck being chased by an F-35. So. All right, did you have anything else you want to say about this segment?
Not much else. I didn't have as many notes. I say I didn't have a lot of notes on these. I've gone over mine on that minute. I do think, I don't know if this is the best minute to kind of go into it, but I do think in general in the film is I don't know. I might have mentioned this in the last section already, but I do think the film's well shot. There's a lot of movement in there. It's very tightly edited. It kind of tells, although it can be quite fast cutting. It's not. Some films are so fast cutting you don't know what's going on. I think this does a good job of kind of telling its story, of kind of keeping you on board with where they are. Other than that, I guess, well, this is the previous section. Other than that previous bit where he suddenly appeared at the top of that building. But otherwise, I do think it's very slickly put together. And as I say, from a filmmaking background myself, I do appreciate kind of how nicely it all comes together, how nicely it's put together, even if the scene itself is utterly ridiculous.
Right. Okay, that's definitely fair. Got it. All right, so today's segment is Franchise Fever, where my guests will be able to tell us their top five movie franchises that have at least four entries. So once again, David, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay, well, my number five actually links to a film I mentioned previously. And my number five is In the Line of Duty. And these are kind of, it's actually kind of an unofficial franchise of Girls with Guns films. So this is going back to what I mentioned. So Royal Warriors, which I mentioned earlier, is from this kind of franchise. But as I say, it's quite unofficial. It was more a case of they'd stick the name In the Line of Duty in them, even though the characters are completely different. It's just basically a series of films about tough cops kicking ass, basically. But they're really solid. I mean, I've not seen. I've only seen the first four. There are further kind of films that have been dubbed in the Line of Duty, but I think the first four are the more kind of well known and the more kind of definitely fit within this kind of group of films, and they're all really solid. As I mentioned earlier, Royal Warriors blew me away when I saw it, and also In the Line of Duty 4 is excellent, and Yes Madam, which is actually, it's debatable as to which film is first because it was really confusing. I think Yes Madam was, I might be wrong here, but if I can remember correctly, Yes Madam came out first and then Royal Warriors was second. But when they were released in the UK, I think Royal Warriors was called In the Line of Duty 1, even though, and then Yes Madam was called In the Line of Duty 2, even though they were released the other way around. But anyway, random useless knowledge. But they're great fun films, really solid. Okay, number four. My number four is The Mission Impossible. I really enjoy the Mission Impossible movies. Number two is a bit ropey, but and they're not always perfect, but they're
always
good
entertainment. Which is funny
because
it's John Woo, and you're a big John Woo fan, so
yeah, I know, but it just doesn't work in that. It doesn't work in the Mission Impossible kind of mold. I think that was the problem. He was just the wrong fit for a Mission Impossible film.
Do you think now it would work better? Because of the way the Mission Impossible film
was. Oh, if he did a not necessarily. I think his films are all more about cool violence, and they're usually more intimate affairs. It's usually more well, in a way. I mean, he's still like Hard Boiled is a ridiculous epic over top action that's probably bad. I'm thinking more about The Killer, I guess. But no, I still don't think it's quite fit. I think it's more handling the kind of spy movie aspects. I don't know. I don't know if John Woo's quite the right guy for that. But either way, it didn't work very well. But I really enjoy most of the other films. I think I had a few problems with the last one, which just came out recently. It wasn't perfect. I thought the first half was weak, but the second half was great fun. I love the fact they do. Tom Cruise uses the series to do ever more elaborate stunts, because I do appreciate good stunt work over just using CGI. So yeah, great franchise. Number three, I'm going to go with the Toy Story. Toy Story 4 isn't the strongest, but I still think it's okay. And the other three are just absolute five-star classics in my book. I adore the Toy Story films. And then number two, I'm going to go with Godzilla. There are so many Godzilla films. Some of them aren't great, and especially... obviously, one of the first American kind of go at it is not good, but if we're talking the original kind of the Japanese films, they can be quite silly, but but the entertainment value is always there, and some of them are really good. And I do think quality wise, it's because they've churned out these films, but they're always, always worth watching. Even the kind of naffer ones are still watchable. So it's got to be up there. But number one, and I imagine a lot of people will have this high in their list, is James Bond. I love the James Bond films. Again, like I said, mentioned earlier about the Naked Gun and the Pink Panther movies. I grew up watching James Bond movies. They used to be on TV. Every bank holiday, they'd have at least one on TV, and I would always watch it. Yeah, so there's no question of what would be number one for me. Again, not all the films are 100% like classic five-star masterpieces, but I will always sit and watch them. Even like Die Another Day, one of the kind of the worst one, I'll still sit and watch it if it's on, because it's James Bond. I love the character. I love the kind of, I just love it. So it had to win for me.
Okay, definitely fair. All right, and so once again, we will also now play the daily game of State Your Motto. Today, your state is California.
Okay.
All right. So your three choices are God Enriches, Eureka, or I Long to See What Is Beyond.
Oh, what was the first one again?
God Enriches.
Oh, that was... what was the second one again? Eureka. I think it's the third one. The
I Long to See What Is Beyond.
Yeah.
No, sorry, it's Eureka. Eureka, because Eureka, of the gold strike of 1849.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, great. So, would you like to once again tell people where they can find David Brooke?
Yeah, you can find me. I run blueprintreview.co.uk, where we largely focus on physical media, but also a couple of other bits and pieces when we feel like it.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very easy. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moveyourobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moveyourobminute@moveyourob.net. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one.